Gather round wizards, it's time to explore. A world full of magic, we're opening the door. With Dan and Jessica, we're here for the ride. On broomsticks and butterbeer, come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the sorting hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know.
Welcome back to another edition of Broomsticks and Butterbeer, episode number 169. I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
We are continuing our journey through Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Last time we talked about chapter 6, the ghoul in pyjamas.
Yeah, I forget. Somebody in our group text said that.
Pyjamas.
And I told them they spelled it wrong and they got mad at me.
Like, that's not how, that is how you spell it, Jess. I said, well.
It depends.
Yeah.
Depends on who you are and where you live, apparently.
So we'll do a quick recap of chapter 6, and then we'll get into chapter 7 today, The Will of Albus Dumbledore. Last time in chapter 6, we saw that everyone was still reeling from the escape from the Burrow, including the death of Mad-Eye Moody, while trying to prepare for the wedding of Bill and Fleur. Harry, Ron, and Hermione are preparing for their journey to destroy the Horcruxes after the wedding. Hermione alters her parents' memories, eliminating any knowledge of Hermione's existence to them, and sends them off to Australia for safety. Have you seen, like, you've seen videos, surely, of some of the creatures that live in Australia?
How Australia tries to kill you?
Yeah, that would not, that would be the least safe place to be.
But I don't, maybe they had relatives there or they just always wanted to go. I don't know.
Have you seen the one where the guy, I guess, was, I don't know if he was paragliding or skydiving or whatever, but he's coming down on the parachute and gets like bum rushed by kangaroos. He's like, "Oi, back off. Hey."
Kangaroos are just like, "No, you're coming from outer space and you must be destroyed.
It is my job
as guardian of this
as
island.
Guardian of the planet." Oh, I wasn't expecting this to go that way. But like something like the spiders and stuff that you see there, they're
massive.
Like the size of like a puppy. It's just insane. Just like you said, I guess dark wizards don't dare go there. Because even, like, they wouldn't be able to do anything against the creatures that live there.
The kangaroos would take care of them.
Yeah, that's true. Earth's protectors. Earth's mightiest heroes. The kangaroo. The God. Oh, okay. Back on track. I'm crying. Where am I at?
Kangaroos are defending the planet.
Kangaroos are defending the planet. Ron has a plan, too. Mr. Weasley, Fred, and George have been altering the look of the ghoul that lives in their attic, even giving him Ron's old pyjamas, to make it look like Ron. And this will hopefully use the ghoul as a fake Ron to explain why he isn't at Hogwarts this coming year.
Yeah, he's sick.
Ugh.
Yeah, he don't feel too good.
Chapter 7. I'm still thinking about those kangaroos. The Will of Albus Dumbledore. Jess, it's finally Harry's 17th birthday, which we know is a huge thing in the wizarding world because Harry is officially an adult, which means that the trace, which detects underage spell casting, is finally lifted from him. And we get right into it in the morning with a whole bunch of birthday gifts. Harry gets a sneakoscope from Hermione and a family heirloom watch from Mrs. Weasley. Tell me about Ron's gift to Harry.
Ron's gift is a book on how to pick up girls.
Yeah, how to pick up chicks.
Witches.
And I think Ron said that, like, even the majority of the stuff in there is not even, like, magic related.
Yeah.
It's just, like the dummy's guide to picking up girls. And later in the chapter, I didn't have it in my notes, but it made me think of later in the chapter when Harry gives Mrs. Weasley a compliment, and Ron's like, yeah, yeah, that's in the book.
Good one, good one. And he's like, no, you could just be nice.
Yeah, that's what the book said. It's like, you know what girls really respond to? Kindness, compliments. Kindness,
compliments, paying attention.
That's kind of just good life advice, you know, just for being like a good person.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, get a girl for snogging purposes. You know, it's just be nice. But yeah. Ron is Ron.
Ron is Ron.
Ron gonna Ron.
And he gets him this book. He says that he really could have used it last year. Mm. And that he's planning on using what he's learned.
And what this, and we can all sum all this up by saying boys are dumb, right?
Okay. I was like, what? Where are we going with this? Boys are dumb.
Especially hormonal teenage boys.
Yeah. Just be nice.
Just be a good person.
Pay attention once in a while.
I wanted to ask your opinion about the concept of the trace. What does the policy of having this trace, meaning that we can track your magical movements up until your 17th birthday, what does that say about like the ministry's relationship with its citizens?
I don't know. Controversial isn't the right word, but it's inconsistent.
Yeah.
And which would make people debate it, I guess.
Sure.
But we learned, you know, we're told that there is this magical trace, magical restriction on people who are underage, on minors, and that the ministry can tell, like Santa's watching. Mm-hmm. They can tell.
It's like the elf on a shelf.
If you've done anything magical. But we also know that they can't. So like the trace was just on Harry's house because they couldn't tell if he did it or Dobby did it.
But they knew when.
But then they knew
he used it in when the Dementors attacked.
Yes, so it's very inconsistent,
uh-huh.
And
it's almost like somebody's like at the ministry, just like watching all these monitors to see if there's anything. But sometimes they doze off a little bit,
and they're like, "I don't." A light went off, but I don't remember if it was an underage light or an elf light or I don't know. And again, if you live in a, you know, wizarding house, there's just magic going on all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, think about the Weasley's house, how many people live there, how many people are just doing magic all the time.
Yeah, I would imagine. I don't see Fred and George waiting until they were 17 to be doing magical stuff up in the attic or on the grounds of the burrow or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe it's something that if you're outside of the house, they can, and alone, then they know it had to have been you. But if you're in the house, then it's more diluted. They don't know who it was. They just know it was somebody in that area.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many at one given time, there were so many little Weasleys running around that house, probably just doing all kinds of,
crazy things. And we know from the beginning that Harry did magic before he even knew he was a wizard.
Before you even know that magic existed.
Yeah. So what were they doing then? They were just like, oh, well, we'll just hope he doesn't notice. But we're not going to like go barging in because that would ruin the secret anyway. I don't know.
I guess Dumbledore could have had some input there.
Yeah. When I got to that part. And I was reading, I opened the book, got to the chapter, and it's, oh, it's Harry's birthday, happy birthday. And then he's like, oh, that means the trace is gone. I was kind of rolled my eyes. And I was like, we probably should have just left that out and let it go. Let's not bring more attention to it. Like, yes, it was there. We used it some in the previous books. But I was kind of like, let's just move past it because it hasn't been consistent.
Yeah, so it's like an inconsistent plot device.
Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
So let's pretend that, let's just not bring attention to it. But she did, and yeah. I thought that was weird.
And I imagine like if you're building this big of a world, that there are going to be some inconsistencies just because of how massive of world building that the author's doing here.
It is a massive world, but you're still in charge of the inconsistencies. Did she forget how she wanted it to work? Or I know things get edited and rechanged and tweaked and changed a million times.
I imagine she didn't think that there would be two people picking apart every word of hers chapter by chapter.
So then she did it out of convenience.
For the whole world.
And she was like, you know what would be good for this part? If this happened. And like, you can't break your own rules.
Yeah.
Just for convenience. That's lazy writing.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. That's a huge world.
I'm just saying back off a little bit, lady.
She wrote it.
Back off a little bit,
lady. She was in charge of it. She made the rules. And then she broke them.
It's our house.
I'm sure
we make the rules.
I'm sure there's somewhere where she explains it away. And is like, well, guys, it works like this. And it's something like we said. Like when they're out on their own, it can be traced directly to them. When it's in a household, it's harder to trace. I don't know.
And then she immediately says hateful stuff about trans people.
Yes.
Oh, she who shall not be named. We haven't talked much about Jenny Weasley recently.
No, she got kicked to the curb. We weren't talking about her at all.
When we last saw her, Harry was breaking up with Jenny for her protection.
It's kind of hard to break up with someone and then live in their house.
Yeah, it is. It's inconvenient. My brother did that for a while. he and his girlfriend were living together, and she...
You know, it took me a moment to remember which one you were talking about.
I know,
because I was
I know.
Oh, did they break up before while she was staying? No, wait. Which one? Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm there now. I know which one.
I don't know if I said it on the show. I know I told you, but when I was at the Missouri Comic Con, my brother, the aforementioned brother, mm-hmm. Andrew, was there with me. And I kind of just threw it out to everybody. Hey, ladies, he's single. And they all go, what house is he? And I said, Slytherin. And there was like, you could hear all the air come out of the room. Oh. And I thought that was, discrimination. And I'm not going to stand for it.
Discrimination or a very handy dating profile?
I don't know. I mean, you can't just say I'm not going to, you know, you might miss out on a good connection, a love connection.
Uh-huh.
If you just take 25% of the houses off your potential dating list. But if they end up being a jerk, then you know why. Oh, there it is.
Oh, there's your colors.
So it doesn't really sound like Jenny is totally ready to let Harry go, does it?
No.
What was it? Talk about Jenny's gift to Harry.
Well, I kind of forgot that he broke up with her.
I mean, too.
I know he did, but I'm pretty sure she just like told him no.
No.
I'm like, did they break up? I mean, he tried, but she was like, you're just doing something stupid and think you're protecting me, and no. Like, I felt like she just told him no and that they weren't actually broken up, which I think is the way she views it, because she did think it through. She was like, I couldn't give you something that, you know, because you're going to go on your journey and you could either have to be really, really useful, or why would you take it with you? And so here's this really passionate kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't just a kiss.
Mm-mm.
This is a kiss.
Mm-hmm. You got anything for that? I don't. No, I don't know if I have anything on my soundboard.
because you didn't have anything, not because the kiss was crickets.
That was a long one. Yeah, I don't know if I got anything. So, Jenny says something like, you know, this is so, I want you something for you to take with you. So,
to like remember
if you run
by.
Into some beautiful villa, then you'll be thinking about me. And then
he said, I think the dating options will be pretty slim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably like if you're on a life or death journey to kill the Dark Lord, by destroying the Horcruxes that he's left pieces of his soul in. You probably don't have a lot of time.
Probably not. But
for dating.
But I could tell you, a lot of these books that I read, that's the, you get bonded on these quests. Mm. And also there's nobody else around. So, you know, things happen.
Ron does kind of look like Jenny.
She does. He does. I don't know. It's this moment is really cute where he's like, oh, there's not going to be a lot of dating options. And she's like, oh, there's the silver lining I was looking for. Like, it was just a really cute line. And I kind of like their dynamic. But we don't see it. Mm-hmm. Ever. We get this two lines where, and he even makes a comment about how she's not weepy, she's not crying, and you know, he dealt with that with Cho, she was always crying. And Jenny just, I really like her, and she gets no page time.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't get fleshed out at all. We just get these little hints of who she is.
I heard that for the upcoming HBO series, they've already recast her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's not going to be very prominent in the first season because she's not very prominent in the first book. But apparently the actress that plays Jenny in the first season is not going to be the one that plays her going forward. So if you are second in line,
it's your time.
It's your time.
You've been called up.
That's right. So Ron and Hermione walk in on some snogging, and Ron is very upset about it. He's not upset about the fact that it's happening, but that Ron feels like dumping Jenny and then kissing her is kind of giving Jenny mixed messages and kind of leading her on. Is that the gist of it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's more what he was mad. I mean, I think he's not completely comfortable with it in general.
Sure.
And this is a good excuse to verbalize, like, I'm going to get behind this. She was really upset when you broke up with her.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're kissing her. I mean, it was very obviously she called him up to her room, took him inside, closed the door. It's mm-hmm. like, what do you think happened? But,
and it, I didn't have this in my notes, but it kind of seemed like Hermione knew what was happening.
Oh, yeah. Hermione always knows.
Because Hermione kind of led
Ron away and was like, no, come on, let's go do this.
Yeah.
And then she tried to stop him, but he like got away from her and barged in. And
I gotcha. So we've got a bit of a party going on outside. When Mr. Weasley's Patronus shows up and actually gives the group a warning that the Minister of Magic, Rufus Scrimgeour, is about to show up. Have we ever seen something like this, where like a Patronus can act like a messenger?
I know it happens again. And I feel like it did happen with Dumbledore once.
So how, if, I didn't even know this was a thing.
Was then maybe not.
I didn't even know this was a thing, but what's like the radius of this? Can I send one like across the ocean to somebody? Like, you know, like I'm sending an owl, but I can send a Patronus.
I don't know if there's a radius so much as like you have to know where they're at or be familiar with the spot.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like you could send your Patronus to your house pretty easily, no matter where you're at.
Huh. I don't know. This seems...
This is another one of those convenient things where we did not mention
that
Patronuses could do this, but...
Oh, did I fail to mention that they could deliver food to people who need it?
Yes.
In a wizard's time of need, if they need food or water, then their Patronus can gather it for them and DoorDash it right back to them. Did I not mention that?
Didn't mention it. Surprise.
So apparently Patronuses can do so much more than I thought they could.
So much more.
Several members of the Order of the Phoenix go off to hide when Rufus shows up. You got something to say? I'm sorry. I'm just trying to do a podcast here.
This is relevant.
Go ahead.
Does Tonks Patronus show up to deliver a message
I don't remember it happening.
Okay. Because Harry saw her Patronus and, you know, was assuming it was for Sirius because it was a dog and da-da-da-da-da. But it wasn't. But I couldn't remember the reason he saw her Patronus.
I was just thinking, like, Molly could, like, if the kids are, like, playing in the field, she can, like, send the Patronus out and say, ah, it's dinner time. Get back here.
Come on. Probably.
So why did several of the members of the Order of Phoenix go off to hide when Rufus shows up?
The only explanation we get is we're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Were they supposed to be?
Well, it does seem a little obvious from later that the ministry is kind of butting their nose into everybody's business and want to know what everybody's doing. And I feel like the Order of the Phoenix is kind of doing their own thing that they don't really want the ministry to know about.
So
they're not working together.
Yeah, I know that.
They got the same enemy, but they're not on the same team.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we get a really good glimpse of that in this chapter. Really good example of that.
I feel like if they were there, it would raise more questions.
Okay.
And what are you guys doing?
It's just not worth the hassle.
Is this really a birthday party, or are you plotting the downfall of the ministry?
I feel that I, as the Minister of Magic, should know
if you're having
all of
a
your
birthday party or not.
So this is not a fun social visit from Rufus. He wants to speak to Harry, Ron, and Hermione away from the group, and actually wants to speak to each one of them individually, though the trio doesn't go for that. Rufus is here to give us the namesake of our chapter and carry out the wishes of the last will and testament of Albus Dumbledore, who passed away about a month ago. So why has it taken the ministry so long, I believe they said it was 30 days, to tell Harry, Ron, and Hermione what Dumbledore had left for them?
This is another really cool moment, I thought, because Hermione just... It's just like it when Hermione, like, schools the adults.
Yeah, she lawyers them.
And he, to the point that he even asked her, are you pursuing law? And she's like, no, I just need to know.
Like, I'm not a piece of crap.
I want to make sure that you don't do things you're not supposed to. Like, it's almost sad that I, as a teenager, have to know the law forwards and backwards so that you get caught.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing what you're supposed to. The government. Is not doing what you're supposed to.
And you're not going to bully us because I know my rights. Do you want to be a lawyer someday, Miss Granger? It's like, do
no.
I look like a horrible person with no conscience?
So yeah, Harry catches on first and he's like, Dumbledore died 30 days ago. Why are you just now coming? And she's like, oh, because they were trying to figure out if there was something secret and what.
Yeah, apparently there is some magical law that when you bequeath something to another wizard when you die, the ministry has the right to kind of go through it and test it to make sure that you're not passing on dark magic materials or dark magic artifacts.
But not just as a standard procedure. She said no, there has to be reasonable cause for you to suspect that this person's doing something illegal,
and they have up to 31 days
to, and if they can't prove that something was malicious, then they have to release the items.
So they're like
on the 30th day.
Yeah, these items are like going over and forwards and backwards. They're seeing if they're cursed. They're seeing if they're hexed. They're seeing if there's some kind of hidden meaning or hidden instructions in them. They really want to know what Dumbledore was up to as it pertains to Harry, Ron, and Hermione. But they couldn't find anything. But that doesn't mean that Rufus is done trying. Even though he has to hand over these items, it doesn't mean that he has given up on finding the meaning behind why these specific items were left to these specific people. And like I said, it's not he's not just there delivering them. He wants to know why each one of them has been left to each person, try to figure out there if there's something, some hidden meaning behind them. Ron's inheritance is a deluminator, something mm-hmm. that Dumbledore actually invented that can capture and restore light sources.
Rufus, which is a nice bring back. That was from the very first book. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're sitting here kind of knocking some of the shortcuts she's taken in the writing, but this was a nice
callback. Callback. Yeah, for sure. Rufus presses Ron on why Dumbledore would leave such a rare object to a student that Dumbledore only had a passing relationship with. Hermione is gifted a copy of The Tales of Beedle the Bard, which is a collection of wizarding children's stories.
But like the original text.
Like a first print.
In runes that nobody can read.
Mm-hmm. And Rufus thinks the book has some coded messages or secret instructions, but because the ministry couldn't find anything magical or dangerous about the text, he's legally forced to hand it over.
Which is another good line where he asked her, did you and Dumbledore talk about code breaking? And she's like, no. And if there was a code in here and you guys couldn't figure it out, I doubt I will. And it's like, I just love those kinds of lines. Because
like, you guys had a month. You had your best people on
yeah.
this.
And if you're willing to admit that you couldn't figure it out, but you think I can, what does that say about you mm-hmm. and your people? Like,
Dumbledore has left Harry two distinct items. The first is the golden snitch that Harry caught in his very first Quidditch match at Hogwarts, the one he almost swallowed. Rufus explains the concept of flesh memory, which I thought I had
also never heard of.
It's
a lot of new stuff in this final book.
Saying that snitches remember the touch of the first person to catch them. Mm-hmm.
Just in case there's any discrepancies.
And I thought this was kind of interesting. They said that when a snitch is made for a game, the creators will even use gloves.
But what if you like swat at it and touch it, but you don't catch it?
Interesting. Then it'll only open a little bit for you.
Oh, okay. And then also for the other person who
like
does
you might
catch
be able
it?
To get like a little crowbar in there if you open it up just a little bit. And then you might be able to pop it open. But if you actually catch it, then it'll open all the way for you.
Hmm. Okay.
Like, what if you spit on it? I guess that's not flesh.
It's not flesh.
What if some, like, little dead cells flake off your skin and fall onto the snitch as it's flying below you?
Oh, dead skin cells is not really flesh.
What if a
flesh
kangaroo comes and he touches it?
Then it's him, obviously.
It's him. Okay. So we got the snitch. We're talking about flesh memory. Rufus had hoped that, here, take it, Harry. Take the snitch.
Mm-hmm.
That it would open and reveal a secret,
the secret.
When Harry touched it. But it did not. It stayed closed.
Didn't do anything.
So that was kind of Rufus. Yeah, I'll deliver these myself. Well, here, Harry, go ahead and take this and see what happens.
Touch it, Harry.
And nothing happened. The second item intended for Harry is the Sword of Gryffindor. But why does Rufus refuse to give the sword to Harry?
Because it wasn't Dumbledore's to give away. And the kids get really upset and argue this, and all the adults end up arguing it later. And I'm like, no, this is obviously a thing. Like, you can't give somebody something that wasn't yours.
Yeah, it's like you die and you give your neighbor's house away.
I'm leaving you the Declaration of Independence in my will.
Nice.
So,
hope
you get that.
Steal the Declaration of Independence.
You don't have to steal it. I'm just going to bequeath it to you.
She's going to bequeath me the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. He says it's a historical artifact. It belongs to the school. It does not belong to Dumbledore. It cannot be given.
Mm-hmm. You can tell that this whole ordeal over the last month has really been wearing Rufus down. And the feeling in the room turns very hostile very quickly. And Rufus accuses Harry of being arrogant and withholding information about Dumbledore's real plans. He demands to know why Dumbledore left them such an odd assortment of items. And things even escalate to the point where Rufus loses his temper, jumps to his feet, pokes Harry aggressively in the chest with his wand, so much so that Rufus burns a hole in Harry's t-shirt.
I, of course, just thought of you and your line of put your finger in his chest.
Oh, I do like to put my finger in people's chest, old school style. When you really want to, you know, give somebody the what's what and the who's who,
uh-huh.
Stick your finger right in their chest.
Uh-huh.
So this is
really
like
do that, people.
Kind of assault, right?
Yeah.
Or battery. I guess it would be battery.
Okay. We'll check with Hermione.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right, because she's our legal expert.
Yes.
So when this happens, the confrontation gets loud, and that causes Arthur and Molly to burst into the room. And I think Rufus kind of realizes that, oh, I kind of crossed the line here.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably time for me to go. So I've, you know, because he could have, if he burned a hole in Harry's shirt, he could have easily, you know, scarred him, burned him. You know, Harry's already got scars from members of the ministry on his hands. So Rufus, as quickly as he arrived, he's gone. And I really think he knows it, the ministry really crossed the line here. But you could also, you saw something like this coming.
But it was
Rufus.
Like one of those weird after hours visits that was off the books.
Uh-huh.
You know, when there's no real witnesses.
Right.
Just some teenagers.
And who are they going to believe?
And know? Harry's credibility is already mm-hmm. being dragged through the mud.
Sure.
With the last administration, so.
And, you know, I'm not defending Rufus here, but he is beyond overwhelmed about everything that's going on. The Dark Lord is back. He is, people are dying. He is trying to take over the wizarding world, and probably by extension that the whole world.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to figure out how to figure out how to stop everything. He thinks that these kids know and they won't tell him.
As much as Rufus didn't agree with Dumbledore, Dumbledore was the most powerful person on the side of good that we had. He's dead. That means any of us could go at any minute. Rufus is just, he doesn't know what to do. He's at the end of his rope, and he's desperate.
Harry fired a couple of shots that really landed with, mm-hmm. you know, people are dying, and you're wasting your time trying to figure out what's so special about a book and a snitch.
Probably had his best people on it.
Yeah.
That their attention could have definitely been going to more important things. But I thought it was interesting that Rufus was really honest about keeping the items for 30 days. He doesn't even try to hide it.
No. But would he have said anything if Hermione didn't, like, literally quote the law at him? He was prepared because he was like, oh, article blah, blah, blah says mm-hmm. that I have the right to keep them. And she's like, only if you can prove that. So I just kind of feel like he was ready to defend his actions, but I don't know that he would have offered that information.
So
if he hadn't gotten caught.
You've kind of already answered this question, but what is this? The fact that they had these items for 30 days put so much, probably were working round the clock
mm-hmm.
trying to decipher some kind of information from them or gather some kind of information. What does that tell us about the ministry's priorities, especially during a time of war?
I mean, they're grasping at straws. And they think this, they thought this was one of them. They mm-hmm. they thought this, if they could just figure out what Dumbledore's plan was and how could they carry on with it, you know?
They're desperate, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that they were totally wrong by diving down this avenue. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously,
neither do I.
Dumbledore had something going on.
Yeah, for sure.
He has a plan. But
and Rufus even says to Harry, we should be working together. You should be helping us. We should be helping you. We should be working together. And you know, he's not wrong.
He's not.
But Harry fires back with, yeah, I've kind of seen how you guys conduct business. I got the scars to prove it.
But that's not totally fair, because that was Fudge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Harry was out of line, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, if the government, you know.
I don't think that Harry should share the information about the Horcruxes, though. We talked about this in the last episode or the one before that, when everybody else, the adults in the Order of the Phoenix in Harry's life, were trying to get it out of him, and he won't tell them. I think it needs to be kept absolutely secret. Voldemort does not know that anybody knows about this.
You know, but I was just thinking, like, you know, if the government does you wrong, does you dirty, you're not going to trust the government anymore. It doesn't matter if we have new leadership. You know, if you think about people of color back in the 50s and 60s and how horribly, you know, they were treated, you know, causing us to go into the civil rights movement. There are still so many, you know, a high percentage of people of color that, even though there's been progress in this country and progress in this world, they're never going to believe what the government says, you know, based on past history. So if you have a direct connection to that, though, kind of like Harry does, I could see from his point of view.
But that's like it's a repetitive thing. It's uh-huh. happened and happened and happened, no matter who was in leadership.
Yeah, systemic.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pattern that, you know, you have learned. There's no one that we can fully trust.
Well, if you think about Harry, though, in his life, in all the years that he's been aware that he is magical and that there is a, you know, a magical group of people running a magical government, they've always attacked him. They've always blamed him. They've never believed him.
At first he was celebrated. Remember, there was the year that the ministry gave them all fancy cars to go shopping at Diagon Alley because Harry was with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at first he was still the hero and the child that lived and was very special, and he was still celebrated. Then he went. Had the downfall.
Well, then I think he started to see how inept the government was.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that much power and the people that in charge are inept, you need to do something about it. You can't, you know, just go along for the ride. And I think that has been, for the majority of his existence in the wizarding world, he has felt that the government is dangerous and that they are not to be trusted, and that they are, even if they do believe you, they're ill-equipped to, or maybe not ill-equipped, but like not willing to do what needs to be done in order to tackle the problem at hand. So when you're that distrusting of the government, yeah, they probably should be working together. But Dumbledore didn't think that was a good idea either. And that's why they're going along with Dumbledore's wishes.
But I think part of that, well, the absolute need for secrecy for the Horcrux thing. But I think we could let go of some of the animosity because they are on the same team. But we also know that the ministry isn't, like, it's been infiltrated.
Yeah.
There's so many spies and double agents and whatever you want to call them, people under the Imperius curse and in there that they, as a whole, as a structure, they can't be trusted because.
Yeah, there's no way it could possibly be functioning for good.
And I guess, you know, it makes a good story, but I wish there was just a little bit less animosity mm-hmm. about it. Like, okay, I know you're not Fudge. I know you're taking this seriously, but you probably shouldn't have spent 30 days trying to figure this out. I just feel like could have come a little closer to common ground.
It's hard to, instead, though, it's hard to, away. forgive when, you know, Dumbledore died basically because it took the Ministry so long to do what they should have been doing for years. Back in book one, when Dumbledore was hiding under the head of the guy with the turban.
Voldemort, yeah. Dumbledore didn't do that.
Yeah, Dumbledore might have been there. I don't know if he was in there, too.
He's everywhere.
It's a big turban, so it could have fit a couple personalities in there. Mm-hmm. But when you see, you know, how the government treated Dumbledore all the way up to his death, you know, I could see where that you'd be a little petty about your feelings toward them and not be willing to just forgive and forget. So I see it from both sides, though. And I think that's what makes it interesting. So I do kind of sympathize with all of Rufus's suspicion. I don't think he's entirely out of line. I also do kind of see, like you said, his point about the sword. So within the wizarding world, we have an artifact like the Sword of Gryffindor. Do you think Dumbledore was right to try to pass it to Harry? Who really owns like an artifact like that? Is it the government?
Is it the school?
Okay.
The school owns it.
The school owns
because
it.
Because he was one of the founders of the school.
But doesn't the Ministry oversee the school? So by extension, then the Ministry technically would be the owners of it?
I guess so. Yeah. But there's got to be something that keeps them from taking it too.
It kind of seems like possession is 9/10 of the law.
I don't think Dumbledore had any inclination that they were going to do this. He just wanted to pass. That's just a secret message to Harry. You need the sword.
Mm-hmm. I get you.
He knew they weren't going to give it to him. He knew they couldn't give it to him.
I didn't even think of that.
But it was just to stick it in their heads.
Uh-huh.
You're going to need to get the sword.
Uh-huh. Interesting. I like that. So even though Harry, Ron, and Hermione are happy that they didn't give Rufus any of the information that he wanted, they're also kind of lost, trying to figure out the meaning of the items that they received. They're convinced that Dumbledore left these specific objects to help them in their quest, but they're kind of overwhelmed by the sheer cryptic nature of the clues. They do realize that Dumbledore had to disguise his gifts so the Ministry wouldn't understand their true purpose and confiscate them, but maybe he disguised them a little too well. So, how do you see Rufus's actions in this chapter? Is he acting like a tyrannical government official obsessed with control, or do you see him more as a desperate wartime leader doing everything in his power to save his society?
The second one.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Obviously the stress and the desperation is getting to him. Mm-hmm. He attacked a child, a 17-year-old. I guess technically isn't a child anymore in the wizarding world, so yeah. I guess that makes it okay. I don't know. It makes it a little better.
I didn't assault a child.
He's an adult as of today.
As of the last 4 hours, he's an adult.
He's like, wait a minute, Harry, do you know what time you were born?
But yeah, like you said, he's desperate. He was very heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
But I can kind of see how his tactics could be justified, given that the wizarding world is on the brink of total collapse, and the hopes of the wizarding world's future are in the hands of a teenager and his buddies, and they're not giving Rufus any information. So he has to just kind of...
He feels like if he just knew what they know and what Dumbledore knows, then maybe he'd have a shot.
Sure.
And I can totally get behind that desperation. Like, if you're trying to help, but you don't have all the information, it's gonna get to you.
So Harry takes another look at the golden snitch, remembers that he didn't catch it with his hands. He almost swallowed it. So Harry presses the snitch to his lips. And when he does, writing appears on the snitch. It says, "I open at the close." And... I thought you were going to give the
what? What?
Well, what?
Because now they're even more confused.
I loved it because they kept saying it over and over again. I open at the close.
I open at the close. Close.
Open at the close.
I open at the close.
Not helping.
We've talked about in the past about Dumbledore as a tactician and someone who's always thinking several steps ahead of everyone else. But does Dumbledore have the right to gamble with the lives of three teenagers by forcing them to play a guessing game during a revolution?
Probably not. There's a lot of people out, not a lot of people out there, but there's a section of the fandom out there that was like, Dumbledore was not the villain of the story, but not the great guy everybody makes him out to be. But we know Harry is in this.
Yeah.
He's mixed up in his fate is just tied to this.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's going to stop that. So, you know, I wouldn't really call it a gamble for Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also for Hermione, she's brilliant. She's going to figure this out. She's going to put all the clues together. Like, he just literally had to give her the scraps of information. And then Ron's, because I know what happens later, it's not really something he has to figure out. It's something that, like, helps him figure out something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't need to puzzle it out. He just needs to have it.
Gotcha.
For later. So, he is gambling with these teenagers, but it's all pretty safe bets, I feel like.
So, on top of everything, the evening sets in. The focus goes back to Bill and Fleur's wedding. We still got to do a wedding.
Got to have a wedding.
We got the minister showing up and assaulting teenagers, but we've still got to have a wedding the next day. The burrow's packed with guests. The chapter ends with Harry trying to take it all in while also thinking about what he has to do after the wedding. So on our last episode, I had fun with the this or that questions that we did. So I brought them back.
Oh, no.
If anyone wants to make this a regular segment and sponsor it, let us know. Like Frederick Roofing presents This or That.
For a hole in your roof or a whole new roof. Frederick Roofing.
Frederick Roofing, 645-2000.
All right. Choice A. Dumbledore's riddles were necessary. If he had been direct, the Ministry or Voldemort would have intercepted the plan and destroyed them. Or side B. Dumbledore was needlessly cryptic. He could have found a secure way to leave explicit instructions, saving the trio massive amounts of wasted time and danger. No fence riding. You got to pick a side here.
I don't feel like he was needlessly cryptic, but I also feel like he could have found another way. McGonagall could have showed up and been like, hey guys, he told me to give this to you.
Yeah, he wrote this down on a Trapper Keeper and delivering it to you.
Even if she just brought the items
and
it went around the ministry altogether.
Mm-hmm. But
I guess
Dumbledore's riddles were necessary or he was needlessly cryptic.
Needlessly cryptic in that he could have found a different way.
Okay. Choice A. Scrimgeour is a desperate, stressed leader trying to find any weapon or clue to save the wizarding world from total annihilation. Or side B. He's a power-hungry bureaucrat who is only interested in controlling Harry, saving face, and protecting the ministry's reputation.
The first one.
You kind of answered that already earlier. Last one. Choice A. The Trace is a dangerous Orwellian government surveillance tool that monitors children under the guise of safety. Or side B, the trace is a completely logical, necessary public safety restriction to keep untrained minors from accidentally harming themselves or exposing magic to muggles.
C, an inconsistent plot point.
Gotta pick one. I was very proud of my Orwellian government surveillance tool. Big Brother, 1984, baby.
I feel like for... there has to be some kind of regulation,
Sure.
particularly for Muggleborns, because they're not living in like a wizarding community, a wizarding household, and they're trying to keep this secret.
Mm-hmm. We've kind of talked about this in the on past episodes, I believe, where we said that, you know, they shouldn't. It shouldn't just be you can only do magic at school. Mm-hmm. There should be specific situations, like kind of like a driver's permit, where maybe you can do magic if you're around. Like,
see,
your,
I was gonna compare it to driving
or
too.
Or maybe if it's a life or death situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, you should be allowed to do that.
Like 8-year-olds aren't allowed to drive cars.
Yeah.
You shouldn't let them drive cars. They can't just drive a car whenever they want. Have there been reports of 10-year-olds driving somebody to the emergency room? Yeah, mm-hmm. it happens, mm-hmm. and they had to. Yeah. And that's what they did. Or there are incidences where people live on farms and they teach their kids to drive the tractors and the farm sure. equipment and the farm truck.
Shoot guns.
On their property. Yeah,
all kinds of stuff.
That's kind of like the wizarding household is like the farm mm-hmm. where you know all this stuff and it's up to you to decide what you want your kid to do and not do. And up to you to regulate them because it's on your property. Seemingly they're not going to like hit somebody else's car or run somebody off the road if they are on your property.
So it sounds like you're kind of leaning more toward, yeah, it's necessary to have this, but maybe it's a little too strict.
It's a little too not well defined.
Gotcha. There should be some loopholes in there. There should be some extenuating circumstances where,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you can use magic. It's kind of like, you know, my parents read to me before I ever went to kindergarten. You know, it's not like the first time I ever saw a book was when I went into kindergarten. The first time I ever learned my ABCs was when I went to kindergarten. You know, parents should do that. Parents should be reading to you. Parents should be
prepping you,
yeah, for before you go to elementary school.
And then there's they talk about children, babies even.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember where it's mentioned. It had to have been like when it had to have already happened. But Sirius was talking about how Harry, as a baby, was zipping around the house on a little broom, like. And the broom was enchanted. But we know that children do magic accidentally.
Yeah.
Unintentionally. And how you can't regulate that.
Sure. Yeah. It needs to be more clearly defined. We need some legislation.
But also, once they start going to school and learning different things, jinxes, hexes, uh-huh. transfiguration, then there needs to be some
sure,
parameters.
You become more dangerous the more you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there should definitely needs to be parameters for that. So
dangerous, and you might be trying things that you're not ready for. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dangerous to other people and to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, we talked about like families that grew up on farms, you know, that were, you know, shooting guns since the time they were 6 years old or whatever. That doesn't mean that you're ready to go out into the world and conceal and carry.
Doesn't you know. Mean at 10 you can take your gun with you to the store.
And you, I mean, there's the argument for the safest, you know, way to protect kids from guns is to not ever show them guns at all. And the other people say, no, the safest way is to show them how to, you know, responsible gun ownership. But when you teach them responsible gun ownership, now they know a lot about guns. Mm-hmm. And that knowledge could be a bad thing.
And it still would need to be, like you're talking about, with the learner's permit for driving.
Yeah, supervised and regulated.
A child should never have a gun when an adult isn't present and physically supervising everything that is happening.
Yep. All that makes sense, Jess. Which means...
we answered the question?
That we answered the question? Kinda. no emails this week, so send us those emails. We're all caught up. Broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. Anything else you want to add about Chapter 7 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows before we get out of here?
Yeah, I wanted to see that snitch cake.
Yeah, the snitch cake. I like how... I think Rufus says something like...
I see that your birthday cake is in the shape of a snitch.
It matches the magical item that Dumbledore left you. Could there be something about that snitch? And Harry said, yeah, he left me a clue in my birthday cake, in the frosting. That's how desperate Rufus has gotten.
It's like a teenager with a baseball or a basketball. Like, this is their sport.
Yeah.
He plays this sport. Uh-huh. He watches the sport. He cheers for the professional
team. There has to be a deeper meaning, Jess. Methinks it lies below the frosting.
Yeah. Probably not.
In the yellow spongy cake.
He just wanted a piece of cake. He's like, I know I came and was kind of a jerk, but...
I know I assaulted.
Can I
get a slice of that cake on the way out?
I promise I'll take it and go.
So thanks to everybody for sticking with us through all our shenanigans and talk of kangaroos and wizards.
They will protect this planet.
I think they're our last line of defense.
Yes.
You know, when
they're only in Australia, so we would have to go to Australia.
That would be where we would regroup society.
Yes.
Like, you know, when the aliens have come and we tried to make peace with them.
Didn't work.
We sent the Rock out as our... I would think he would be the envoy that we would send out to represent Earth.
I guess not. At first I was like, but what about Will Smith? Because he's in the Alien movie.
No,
but
no, he's too
no.
aggressive.
He's very aggressive.
Yeah, he's
slapping people.
Unstable, mentally unstable. Jada broke him. He's a broken man.
Yeah, he doesn't get to go. What about Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks is a great suggestion.
I feel like The Rock, even though he likes to play his guitar and sing to his horses... he has a very gentle soul. He just looks too intimidating.
Yeah, but you don't want to send, you know, somebody out. You want to project strength, you know?
Can The Rock be Tom Hanks' bodyguard?
Let's just send both of them. And Obama.
And Obama, definitely.
So our Mount Rushmore of envoys that we're sending to greet the aliens are Tom Hanks, Barack Obama, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and you get a fourth.
We got to get a woman in there.
Yeah, yes. Come on. Absolutely. Let's not be misogynist here. Taylor Swift? I don't know.
I don't know. I just see her more business and creativity than like...
You need somebody who's business.
But she is very like glad handy.
Yeah. She
knows how to work the public and work a crowd.
She does. There's a lot of people that you wouldn't think like her music that like her music. She's changed a lot of minds.
Yeah. Yeah. Your dad's changing his band to a cover band.
So I had a dream last night. Since the people hadn't known nothing about what you're talking about, I had a dream last night that my dad's band,
which is just some like old dudes.
Yeah.
Gray hair, old dudes.
Yeah. My dad and one of the band members are in their 70s.
There you go.
And I think the other one is in his 40s or 50s.
Oh, okay. Sorry. You're not as old.
But I had a dream last night that they had found a lot of success now and were playing bigger gigs and were getting paid more. And
you were impressed.
And had achieved a new level of popularity. Because they had become a Taylor Swift cover band.
My first question is, who was singing?
My dad and Josh. Huh. They were, you know, singing. Huh. I would think if they really put their minds to it, they could probably put, you know, they're very talented musicians, the three of them. They could probably learn her catalog pretty easily and put their own little spin on there.
Part of her catalog. I mean, it's huge.
It is.
But you just got to start somewhere.
But it's kind of, I've told you before, there's kind of some, it's kind of like a Mad Libs for her when she writes a song. It's kind of formulaic. I know I'm going to get a lot of Swifties hating on me here. Hey, I'm sending her out
in the alien
greeting group.
Party.
Yeah. Tom Hanks, Barack Obama, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Taylor Swift. Send us who you're for, your Mount Rushmore of who we're sending to greet the aliens.
And then we just have like four kangaroos standing behind them with sunglasses on.
And they're just like smacking their fists together. They got boxing
gloves on.
Stomping
their feet a little bit. And sunglasses.
Maybe they come riding the kangaroos. Like Tauntauns from Star Wars. So send us who you're mount. I'll send a swag pack to the person who gives the best Mount Rushmore of who we're sending out to greet the aliens from our planet. So, you know, if you're in a different country, you might not have the same four that we have.
I mean, they'll still have Taylor Swift.
Everybody will have Taylor Swift, and everybody will have Tom Hanks. Because we've had this discussion in the inner circle that Tom Hanks is the most famous person in the world.
There's nobody more famous than Tom Hanks.
It has
been established.
Not even Taylor.
No.
Mm-mm. Maybe eventually.
Eventually.
Maybe eventually. But Tom Hanks has got like, what, 40-year head start on her.
Yeah.
So... send us that broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. Follow us on X. I know we don't post much, but we do post when the episodes are up. And you can send us messages on there if you follow us, because we'll follow you back. You can send us your top four on X at broomsticksb. You can send Jess messages to the Broomsticks and Butterbeer Instagram at broomsticksb podcast. We're also on Blue Sky at broomsticksb and also on Facebook as well. Really easy to get a hold of.
Ask Bobby. Bobby knows.
Yeah.
He talks to us on Facebook.
Yeah. Bobby's great.
Bobby Lopez.
Yeah. Bobby's great. He's the best. Bobby is going to be in our honorable mention for who we're sending out to greet the aliens.
If Tom Bobby's Hanks, like, no,
if Tom
I'm good.
Hanks can't
I'm good.
Make it, then Bobby Lopez is in.
Oh, God. I hope you're cool with that.
Yeah. But no, he'll be great. He'll do a great job. I think
some
that's
people
it.
Don't want to meet the aliens, babe. You don't know.
Shout out to the Inner Circle, Jennifer, Catherine, Amelia, Jane, Ronnie, Anastasia, Kelly, Olivia, Jenny, and Emma. We will be back next time with Chapter 8 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. If you're listening to this as the episode drops, tomorrow's my last day of school.
It's only a half day. It's only 4 hours.
Year 23 about to come to a close. Hopefully only a couple more first days and last days of school after this. And then I will be fancy free. Carefree and fancy free.
Oh, do you say you were going to work at the donut shop?
They're always accepting applications. Old Town Donuts, voted the number one donuts in America. 5 minutes from our house.
Yes.
We just went there this morning.
We did.
And gorged.
I had some regrets, but we did go.
We did. I have no regrets.
It was really good, but I tried to exercise afterwards and I felt like I was going to die.
Yeah, when your fuel that you put in your car, in your body.
Is fat and sugar.
Is sugar, sugary goodness.
Fried sugar.
Then your car's going to run a little funky for a little while.
It did.
That's just the way things go. But I don't regret anything. I regret nothing.
I wasn't hungry afterwards either. I ate nothing but
How could you be?
I ate those donuts and then dinner, and that was all I had all day.
I had a dozen of those donut holes. That's about a day's worth of calories. So, yeah, I definitely wasn't hungry.
Y'all, they have a French toast donut, and it's amazing, and I don't even like French toast.
Which is blasphemy to me, because French toast is delicious.
Soggy bread, and it's gross.
It's not soggy once you fry it. starts off as soggy bread.
Yeah, it loses its structural integrity once you get it soggy.
Interesting. Agree to disagree. But until next time, everybody, may your donut dreams come true. May the kangaroos protect you to the very end. And be a wizard, be a witch, be a muggle, be a squib, but don't be a jerk.
Or a git.
See ya.
Bye.
Gather around, wizards. It's time to explore a world full of magic. We're opening the door with Dan and Jessica. We're here for the ride on broomsticks and butterbeer. Come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the sorting hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. From the Quidditch games to the dark magic's call, we'll take on each chapter, seeing how they enthrall. Hermione's wisdom, Ron's loyal fight, we'll discuss every twist, make the dark turn bright. With an open heart and a curious mind, we'll unlock the secrets that are waiting to find. So grab your broomstick and settle in tight. It's time for the journey we're starting tonight. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. Through the pages we wander side by side. And every adventure, we take it in stride. The laughter and lessons, the love and the pain. With each chapter shared, we'll never be the same. Let's raise our glasses to the stories we share. In the world of Potter, there's magic everywhere. From Diagon Alley to the Forbidden Forest, exploring this universe, we're never the worst. Every twist and turn, oh, it makes us feel the power of friendship, that's the real deal. So don't miss a moment, let's savor the fun. With broomsticks and butterbeer, the magic's just begun. So here's to the chapters, both old and new. With every spell cast, a world that feels true. On broomsticks and butterbeer, we'll see you next time. With laughter and magic, we're full.